dairy industry, cattle and hog producers, produce growers, row crop producers, the ethanol industry. Everybody is waiting, sometimes not so patiently, for details of what the COVID aid program and payments might look like. And we're getting closer to the details. I mean, heck, if the airtime that Secretary Perdue is getting is any indication, details could come today.
It's a lonely room via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition. That's Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. And in the final segment, Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson joins us. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm Hans, the newsman, Davis. Chip Flores.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. We got a lot of that, yeah. But we don't know where you're broadcasting from, and we're not exactly sure who you are. Where are you broadcasting from here this morning? Because all of a sudden it sounds better.
Yes. From the silence of my lonely room is where I'm broadcasting from. We got Steenhoek, Cooper, Peterson, Henderson. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Do I have to say the Chip Flory part again?
No, you're good.
Chip Flory. Oh, sorry. Okay.
You're all good.
I wasn't sure where to go out on that.
Yeah.
Waiting for my cue.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. There's Joe Stackler, producer of AgriTalk.
Big Apple Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is so funny, and I'll admit watching the news, whether it be CNN or CNBC or Fox Business or Channel 7. out of Waterloo, Iowa, it does give me some comfort, because you see those guys struggling too every now and then with internet connections because of what we're all dealing with right now. You know,
right.
I guess it gives me a little comfort.
I should apologize to the beloved listeners. Thank you for hanging in with this handsome newsman. My internet was nowhere near equipped for this sort of thing, but we're gonna make it work anyway.
Are the kids e-learning?
The kids are not even e-learning. I don't even have that excuse today.
Oh,
they're just hanging out, probably eggs or something.
Let's hope that they don't have any cleaning projects with the vacuum plate for this morning.
They're banned from cleaning for the entire day, so we're clear today.
love it. All right, hey, you sound good right now. Let's get to the news.
Thanks, I feel good. The Trump administration is mulling a plan to pay oil producers, Chip, to leave crude oil in the ground to help trim the world supply overhang. The Department of Energy plan would reportedly involve purchasing 365 million barrels of proven oil reserves, using the department's latitude to store up to 1 billion barrels in a strategic petroleum reserve, and companies would be required to provide the physical crude in the future. But the plan would require billions of dollars appropriated by Congress, a move considered unlikely. If the DOE were to purchase the 365 million barrels, it would need Congress to approve about $7 billion in spending at current oil prices. And it's believed the Democrats in the House would probably hold this up. Chip?
You know, yeah, I think that's probably the case. But when's the best time to build up your reserves of something like crude oil?
Mm-hmm.
When prices are as low as they are right now, am I wrong?
No, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we're going to initiate some kind of a program or build on, I shouldn't have said initiate, sorry. If we're going to build on the program as it stands, now seems like a great time to do it.
Well, sure, because at $40, that's $7 billion to get it done all of a sudden becomes $14
billion. Yeah.
That makes
sense.
Right. Yeah. Well, Chip, you're not going to like this, but five U.S. governors asked the Trump administration to waive U.S. biofuel blending requirements under the renewable fuel standard, arguing the cost of complying with the mandates on top of coronavirus-spurred lockdown pose a, quote, severe economic harm to the country. Well, I bet we'll get more from Jeff Cooper on that a little later.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you think I don't like it, wait until we talk to Jeff at the bottom of the hour. There's a dude that don't like this.
Yeah, it could be some fireworks a little later on. Yep. Stay tuned. Yep. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue is working to reassure Americans the nation has plenty of food as coronavirus infections ravage through the packing industry. Purdue said, quote, the bare store shelves that you may see in some cities in the country are a demand issue, not a supply issue. Meanwhile, Chip Smithfield Foods, the largest pork producer in the world, says it will shutter two U.S. plants that process bacon and ham as plant closures mount. Officials say the food chain remains healthy, pointing to large stockpiles in storage. Important to keep that in perspective.
Yeah, those bellies and hams to be processed at those two plants that were closed were coming from Sioux Falls. Okay, so that's why those two plants are being shuttered temporarily until we can get them back up and running. But, boy, the labor issues out there at the packing plants, no question. Workers aren't showing up. And then then the communication between the workers at the different plants in the state of Iowa is ramping up. And all of a sudden they're finding out that, oh, hey, there's that $600 extra on the unemployment benefits.
Well, USDA continues to ready an ag aid package amid increased calls for help. The Trump administration will make purchases of milk and meat products as part of a $15.5 billion initial aid package to farmers rattled by the coronavirus. And just real quickly here, Chip, the Department of Homeland Security announced it will ease H-2A visa restrictions, making it easier for U.S. ag businesses to hire immigrant workers who are already in the country. And finally, in the first meeting of President Trump's council to reopen the U.S. economy, banking and financial service executives said the administration needed to dramatically increase the availability of coronavirus testing before the public would be confident enough to return to work. Chip.
Hey, let's hear it for you. You got through that one, Davis.
I made it. I made it.
Yeah, man. I love it. All right, bye.
Just kidding. Bye.
Yeah, that's Davis Michael. So let's bring in Greg Henderson, the editorial director of Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
I'm great, Chip. Things are going fairly well on my internet end, although I keep getting these reports about packing plant closures and slowdowns and poor prices, and it just the news has not been good.
No, no, and it's coming at a quick enough clip that I mean, because you get the reports and you got to confirm stuff as it goes, and it's tough to keep up right now. There's no question about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, this cattle industry is taking a hit. What have you seen as far as what the whole year looks like and what the recovery might look like?
Right. So, you know, yesterday NCBA issued their economic assessment from a gathering of ag economists, said we're going to lose $13 billion from the cattle industry, 40% of that to the cow-calf sector. You know, this obviously this packing plant thing, the supply is cramped right now. Not good. However, I listened to a webinar last night, Daryl Peel from Oklahoma State and Scott Brown from Missouri, two economists that spent a lot of time on this. Oh, yeah. They think there are a string of ifs here. If we get out of this in the next couple of weeks, if the restaurants come back open. But they do see the fourth quarter of this year showing a bright spot. Now, earlier they were predicting that the fourth quarter of this year would be better than last year. Now they're saying if it's as good as last year, that will be a win for the cattle industry.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that a lot. All right. Thank you so much, Greg. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you later. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. All right. We're going to talk infrastructure and recovery and how infrastructure can play a role in the economic recovery of this country. We got Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on for our family and yours.
Hey, Davis. I forgot to mention at the top of the show. Are you there, buddy? Oh, hey, you're kind of there.
Am I not?
There you are.
Davis,
there you are.
Davis.
Yeah.
There you are.
I feel present.
I got dressed up for the show today.
You what?
Wow. I got dressed up. Okay. I mean, like a button shirt, a sport coat.
Huh?
Everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Give us a little twirl. Give us a little twirl, would you?
There it is.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Looking sharp, big fella.
Thank you.
Atta boy.
There.
I'm in sweats. I'll be honest. I'm in sweats and a tank top, wife beater. Yeah.
I am too. But yeah. I've got the button-down shirt and the sport coat on.
Top half.
Yeah. Does that maybe indicate that I've got a webinar coming up immediately after the show?
Oh, I see. Now it's making sense. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. You don't need pants as long as you got your thinking cap on. Is that the idea?
I've got the sweatpants on. I've got.
Oh, thank heavens.
Yeah. No,
that was
no
an image
doubt.
None of us needed. Yes.
Oh, good grief. All right, let's get to this. Mike Steenhoek is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, and he joins us right now. Mike, my friend, it is good to talk with you again. How are you? I hope everything's well.
We're doing fine, Chip. It's good. Always good to be with you.
Good, good, good. So here's a question that I've been asking a lot of people, or most people when they come on the show, Mike, how's business? Is everything functioning as you want it to in this crisis?
Well, for me personally, you know, the global headquarters of the Soy Transportation Coalition can be in a variety of places.
Right.
I'm the only full-time staff member, so I've been used to working remotely, and so certainly that's served well during this time. But clearly, it's an adjustment for all of us. And the thing is about the work that I do is that there really never is a finish line. There's always opportunities for improvement, particularly when it comes to the infrastructure that serves agriculture. So the work certainly continues, and there's just I think a lot of opportunities to really move the needle in a positive direction.
Yeah, and so important for you is communicating with lawmakers and decision makers. Have you been able to reach out and communicate to the people that you need to?
Yeah, we certainly have, and
good.
Clearly it's there's a new normal or a big adjustment for them as well. And
yeah.
And the point that I really try to make to our elected officials is, look, you guys have really been focused on trying to meet these immediate, unexpected needs with immediate resources. It's kind of, very much like triage stabilization kind of initiatives and activities. And as we ultimately transition from that to what I call long-term wellness, may you consider infrastructure investment as one of the best opportunities to ensure the long-term wellness of the broader economy, including agriculture.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. We do need to stay focused on the now and what is happening right now in the and the response to get this economy going again. But your note the other day, Mike, was so refreshing because it is looking forward to when we do start to get into that economic recovery time, and you've got two pieces of legislation that you're very focused on with this in mind, right?
Yeah, the couple pieces of legislation. One's called, commonly referred to as the Highway Bill, which refers to roads and bridges throughout our country, and also the other one is called a Water Resources Development Act, and that relates to the condition of our inland waterway system with our locks and dams. And both of those pieces of legislation were on the to-do list for Congress and the administration in 2020. And the temptation would be, in the midst of this seismic event, is to push so many things onto the back burner and to defer action on them and postpone them. And so, clearly you have to do some of those things, but I think that it should make us more focused on and create a greater sense of urgency to do something on infrastructure, because again, that helps promote the long-term wellness of our economy and of agriculture. And I think it's one of the best ways of expressing and conveying that the United States wants to be and remain the best place to do business. And when you see that kind of investment signal, that's one of the most effective and compelling ways of conveying that message.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that. You've had a couple of you've had some influence over the last 12 months, Mike, with the dredging project down at the mouth of the river, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, and it's happy. I'm happy to report that that project is continuing to move forward, and it may actually start earlier than anticipated. You know, it, certainly by fall of this year, we'll see action on it. It may even be earlier than that. May even be late summer. So this work is going to proceed, and making a significant capital improvement to the number one export region for soybeans and corn. Allowing us to load ships with more soybeans, with more corn. And, you know, what's so compelling to me about infrastructure investment is transportation is a cost of business. And we should be all about, whether it's agriculture or any other industry, we should be all about trying to remove the costs of doing business in the United States, including farming and agriculture. And when you do these kind of investments, you make us more competitive and well-positioned for success in the future. That's always a good message to be focused on. Right. It's particularly a good one today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've got that project. Another river project is over on the Illinois River for this summer and fall, right?
Yeah, the Army Corps of Engineers has scheduled a number of major rehabilitation projects on some of these locks on the Illinois River that are in dire condition. And they need to have a lot of tender, loving care. And so we're happy to see that this is going to proceed. It's something we've been advocating for a number of years, and we're happy to see it's coming to fruition. We're hopeful that it'll just remain on schedule, though. That's the real big challenge that we're going to have.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, let's get back to cutting some costs and go to the roads and the bridges out there, because if the trucks could cross every bridge that's in their path, Mike, we could cut down some miles and save some money getting product to the processors.
Yeah, you know, and it's really, the temptation is when you have a bridge that's load restricted or closed altogether, the temptation is to say, oh, that's not that big of a deal. I'll just take a detour and I'll tack on 5 minutes to my trip. Well, when you're operating a semi, every mile of detour is a pretty significant expense, and we did some research a number of years ago in which we analyzed a rural county in central Michigan, and they had load postings on just three bridges. And by removing those load postings and the detours associated with that, the taxpayers in that county, just by removing the load postings on those three rural bridges, saved over $100,000 a year.
That's
just
crazy.
Because you're not incurring these detours. And you think, multiply that times the number of structurally deficient and posted bridges in rural America throughout the country.
Yeah.
There's millions of dollars of potential savings if you just do a better job of maintaining and improving these rural bridges.
You know, maintaining and infrastructure, Mike, those two words don't go together nearly enough, do they?
And I think it's really been one of our calling cards and one of our points of emphasis, because farmers have a part of their brand ID is stewardship, maintaining things. The default position for a farmer is when they have a problem is not to, well, I'm just going to blow a bunch of money and just try to fix it that way. They try to figure out a new way to kind of jigger something together and try to make it work, and to really practice stewardship. And I think there's a lot of opportunities to practice better stewardship, to do a better job of maintaining what you have when it comes to our infrastructure. Rural bridges, that's a good example of it, certainly with locks and dams. Yes, we need new investment, but we also need to practice better stewardship. And, you know, I think farmers are one of the most effective messengers for that, making that case.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Hey, we're out of time here, Mike, but any last words for the guys out there?
Well, I think, you know, farmers, we're really focused on, you know, being able to supply the food for this country and beyond. We're focused on having that infrastructure that can accommodate it. And, you know, we're going to be one of those industries, and farmers in particular, who are really going to be helping lead us out of this challenge that we find ourselves in. I look forward to continuing that work.
Good stuff, Mike. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Mike Steenhoek. He is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. We got Jeff Cooper coming up next from RFA.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I'm looking for the plus signs. And in the grains, I can actually go to corn and see some plus signs today. What's going on?
Yeah, a little bit, Chip. You know, kind of back and forth trade, to be honest with you. We saw a little bit of price strength overnight, backed off late in the session, then faced a little bit of pressure here early in the daytime trade, but now it's back to the positive side. Not a whole lot going on, to be honest with you. The weekly export sales were disappointing. Not a lot of news. I think just a little bit of mild corrective buying at this point in time after the multi-year lows yesterday. You know, we talked about potentially going down to challenge that low $3 level.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, still got some pressure going on wheat and soybeans.
Yeah, the wheat market, we talked about it yesterday, but the funds are getting out of their length in the SRW contracts in particular, and more of that's happening this morning. The weekly export sales weren't anything spectacular, and either with the beans, and so those markets just aren't finding much buyer interest so far this morning.
All right, big gains going in the cattle complex.
Yeah, limit gains in some of the live and feeder cattle contracts. So that's probably the biggest news of the day so far, is that they are responding. We did have a good weekly export sales number on the beef side of things, included China with some buys there of beef. So, that's given us a little bit of price support. Not the same in the hog market, unfortunately. Good export sales, but we've now seen losses start to build, especially in those summer month contracts.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Last week, AgriTalk paid tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream during Agronomy Week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb Agro and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and joining us right now is Jeff Cooper. Jeff is the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing okay. How are you, Chip?
Well, I'm all right. Health-wise, everything's fine. We're doing our part out here. But what the heck was this that we got late yesterday from the governors of, I think I can get the states, Texas, Louisiana, Utah, Oklahoma, and Wyoming?
Yeah.
This letter that they sent to EPA requesting waivers from blending, what was that all about?
Yeah, well, it's just, the refiners see that the ethanol industry is really struggling right now, and so they want to try and kick us while we're down. They did convince five governors from those states you mentioned to send a letter to Andy Wheeler, the EPA administrator, yesterday, asking him to just waive the renewable fuel standard for 2020 because COVID-19 has reduced gasoline demand. And that is just preposterous, Chip, that they would ask for a waiver. They're forgetting, apparently, that the RFS requirements actually move in tandem with gasoline and diesel demand. So if gasoline and diesel consumption ends up falling 15% or whatever because of COVID-19, the actual renewable fuel volumes that are required also are reduced by that same percentage. So we really need EPA to just reject that request out of hand and get back to the business of enforcing the RFS.
Right. So ideally, this is as far as it goes because they didn't follow the proper channels in filing that. And we hopefully the response from EPA is we got your letter duly noted and we move on. But That's probably too much to hope for, isn't it?
Well, with this particular EPA, it may be too much to hope for. We know in 2012, when some governors requested a waiver because of the drought, that's exactly what happened. The EPA administrator at that time looked at it and said, this doesn't come close to meeting the criteria that's laid out in the statute for issuing a waiver, so forget it. You guys need to comply with the program. But we've seen from this particular administration, a very sympathetic year at EPA when it comes to anything that the refiners bring to that agency. So it's just another issue we're going to have to remain on guard for, and we'll be weighing in with the agency and discouraging them from taking this any further.
Okay. All right. Jeff, what's the damage assessment so far to the ethanol industry here?
Well, and that's the thing, Chip. I mean, this is coming at a time where we've got a huge crisis emerging in the ethanol industry, worst crisis in the history of the industry. I think it's interesting to note that in the first week of March, so, 6 weeks ago, our industry was producing at a rate of 16 billion gallons of ethanol on an annualized basis. This last week, we were at 8.7 billion gallons. So we've seen about half of the industry's capacity come offline in 6 weeks. We have 70 ethanol plants across the country that are shut down. We've got another 67 plants or so that have greatly reduced their output rates. So the industry is struggling. And obviously, when you see a 50% demand loss in gasoline consumption, that's going to hit our industry very, very hard, and that's what we're seeing right now.
Okay. What does the recovery look like, Jeff? I mean, is it a recovery in the liquid fuel market that leads the recovery for ethanol?
Yeah, we've looked at this 100 different ways, Chip, and we think the only way out of this box is to get the economy reopened, to get people back on the roads, driving to work, driving to school again. If we're not consuming gasoline, we're just not going to be consuming the levels of ethanol that our industry, was preparing to produce and distribute this year. So, that along with, hey, you got to enforce the damn RFS, especially in times like these, where our industry really looks toward the RFS as a source of some certainty and a floor for demand. And so we really need the administration to stick to its guns on the RFS, implement the program, and put that floor under demand for ethanol and other renewable fuels.
Okay. The recovery, when we get to post-COVID, do we get 60% back, 80% back, 100% back? What are your expectations on ethanol production? Because things are going to change, Jeff.
They are, and it's really hard to know exactly what this recovery is going to look like, how quickly people are going to be getting back on the roads. The sort of how the different states reopen their own economies. It's really been put in the hands of the governors at this point. And so I don't think anybody knows at this point how quickly gasoline consumption is going to recover. And therefore, we don't know how long it's going to take to bring some of these facilities back online and producing ethanol again. The other thing we know, though, Chip, is we've got stocks at record levels. We've got 1.2 billion gallons in storage right now. So even when things start recovering and we turn a corner and people start driving again, it's going to take some time to work off just this enormous overhang over the ethanol market. And that's going to keep some plants from opening right away as well.
What are the odds that we could work some of that overhang, the ethanol that we've got in stocks in storage right now, through exports? I mean, where's China in all this, Jeff? The ethanol's damn cheap. They ought to be in here buying it like crazy.
We got to have China. We got to have China swing the door open to our exports again to really help in this recovery. Exports could play a really key role in helping sort of expedite the recovery of our industry. But we got to have willing partners. We got to have our export markets open and committed to free and fair trade with us. And right now we've got Brazil pulling some funny business with a tariff rate quota. We've got some problems with Colombia, which is one of our larger export markets. And then of course what's going on in China. So we need commitments from those trading partners that they're going to open their doors and be fair and free in their trading relationships with us.
Okay, Jeff, when I think about the recovery and the post-COVID period, I can see the environmentalists out there saying, taking a snapshot of the pollution measurements that we're that we're looking at right now with the cars off the road,
it's the
air is cleaner, and they're going to take a snapshot of it and say, this is what it could be, America, this is what it should be, let's get back to it. Ethanol is going to have to play a role in that, a bigger role in that.
Well, that's right, and that's already happening. We are seeing analyses done of the air quality in places like India and China and other places, and they're all saying, "Hey, look, nobody's driving, and the air, you know, we can actually see in these cities today." We think that they're right, and that bodes well for ethanol. We can keep those skies clear and keep the air clean if we increase the amount of ethanol that we're blending with our gasoline, and so we do think. As we talk about reopening the economy and recovering and kind of getting back to whatever normal is going to look like, there is a strong case for including more ethanol in the blend to make sure we don't go back to the smog and soot and just all the air pollution problems we had before this.
Okay, just as a reminder to everybody, E10 reduces your tailpipe greenhouse gas emissions by about one-third. Okay.
Yep.
Let's get to the recovery. Now, okay, how do we even get to the recovery with enough of the industry still operational, Jeff?
Well, that's what we're really focused on today, Chip. And like I said, we got about half the industry idle today. Priority number one for those ethanol plants that are not running is keeping their workers and keeping those employees close, continuing to take care of them, covering their wages and benefits. You know, the CARES Act and some of the programs that were part of that legislation have been helpful in doing that. We hope it's enough. We may need more assistance in terms of the Paycheck Protection Program and some of those other small business loan programs. But that's just one piece of the equation. We're seeing these facilities have burned through their cash reserves. There's absolutely no cash flow for a lot of these companies. So what happens when the market does improve? How are they going to pay for corn and other inputs that are needed to ramp back up production? And so we've been, reaching out to USDA and encouraging the department to strongly consider including ethanol in any ag rescue package that they're working on. And we know they're right in the middle of working on one now, and providing direct assistance from the CCC. To ethanol producers to help them pay for that feedstock so we can start grinding corn again immediately when market conditions improve.
Okay. Has Secretary Perdue been receptive of that conversation?
Well, I think there's a good understanding at the department about the level of pain being experienced in the ethanol industry. We haven't gotten really much word on what is in and what isn't in this aid package that is being developed as we speak. But we certainly have been making our case to the department, and we hope that ethanol is not forgotten when they roll that out.
Okay. Have you gotten any indication on the timing when they might? Because Secretary Perdue's been all over the news here in the last 12, 18 hours. Any idea when it might be coming?
We've heard it could be yet this week. There was some rumblings that we were going to see something yesterday. Obviously, that didn't happen. But we think it's soon. If not this week, we would probably expect to see something early next week.
Jeff, take care of yourself, buddy. Keep taking care of the industry, too. We appreciate everything that you are doing for the ethanol industry.
Well, likewise, Chip, appreciate the chance to give an update and tell you what's going on in the industry. Thanks for your support.
You betcha. You betcha. That is Jeff Cooper, and always Jeff on the support side there. Jeff Cooper, the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. We're going to talk with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, up next.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Plowing needs
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and
How could anyone not love Jeff Cooper? Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah, and no, what a great guy. The guy's
I'm
got
glad
passion.
He's on our side.
Yes,
he's, I'm glad he's on our side.
he's got a passion for what he does. There is no question about that. And he's working overtime, doing what they can to make sure that this. And that, I think, one of the last things that we talked about there was making sure that the industry itself can get to the recovery phase and mm-hmm. participate in the recovery. That, I think, is so important, and it's something that we cannot overlook. The timing of this aid is so important. Mm-hmm. What are the restaurants going to do, you know, to get restarted? Sure, they're covering payroll. But when it comes time to restart, how do they refill the freezer? How do they? There's all kinds of mm-hmm. expenses that you basically got to go through startup again. We are faced with challenges upon challenges to get to the other side of this. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, joins us again. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How about you?
Good, good, good. So I see your first item on the list here, and it's in Red Cloud, Nebraska. And I've got some really good memories of Red Cloud, Nebraska, and a little diner called Shug's. On Crop Tour, it's where I learned that eating pie for breakfast is perfectly acceptable.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What is your preferred pie for breakfast choice, by the way?
Well, no. I'm more of a fruit pie for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, the berries, the apple, the cherry. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what about rhubarb? Is there rhubarb involved in that? Rhubarb's a fruit, right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
A little rhubarb pie for breakfast. I'm going to go get some right now.
The one thing I would say, I'm not a coffee drinker, so OJ in the morning, and I would say apple pie and orange juice is a weird combo to start the day. That's the only thing I'll say.
You're just not putting enough Velveeta cheese on the apple pie.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. So what is going on down, or what happened down at Red Cloud?
Yeah, it was Tuesday, guys. I know on Monday we talked. I was highlighting the sale, and it was a online collector auction by my friend Kurt Ahman Vintage Power for John Nicodeme, well-known John Deere vintage tractor collector. And also my friend Steve Planbeck from Nebraska put a few 20 and 30 series tractors on. And we did get a couple records Tuesday on the sale. They had a very unusual tractor, a 1935 John Deere 4-bolt Garden B. Only made 24 of them. And I could tell this thing was getting all kinds of online bids in advance. And it wound up selling for $47,250, which just blew away any John Deere B that I've ever seen. I think $26,000 was the previous high 9 years ago on a sale in Yuma, Colorado.
Oh my gosh.
That set a record. And then John had, staying with his stuff first, he also had a 1924 John Deere Spoker D. It was the 86th one made. Ton of just incredible detail and history on it, documentation. That went for $45,150, which is the third highest auction price I've ever seen on a D. They did see one at $57,500 back 13 years ago in Leighton, Missouri. That was a restored 24 spoker. And let's see, they also had a John Deere A experimental single front high crop, which looked super dangerous to be driving, but that thing was really cool looking. I brought 19.9. That was the sixth highest A I've ever seen. And the other record set Tuesday was a 1973 John Deere 4030. That was Steve Planbeck's, my buddy. And it was a narrow front, 4-post open cab that brought $34,650. Hmm. So, again, maybe after the sale, everybody, well, I guess we can't congregate. I don't even know if restaurants are open in Nebraska, but definitely it should have been head to Shug's after that sale and have a piece of pie and celebrate.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. We promised a conversation on this when you were on earlier this week. What is this drag racing combine that you've been talking about?
Yeah. Well, I sort of forgot about it, honestly. A couple of years ago, I had posted a blog. There was a guy in Finland that took a vintage 1967 Far M44 combine, which obviously we don't see over here, but in Europe was common back in the day. And he, for whatever reason, he souped it up. He put a 1976 Cadillac Eldorado V8 engine in it, 500 horsepower, and the thing does 95 miles an hour. And a guy in Norway bought it. So here's my deal, is that I'm Norwegian.
Yeah.
A little bit of Finn in me, but you know, our Scandinavian brothers are not accused of being super adventurous all the time, but
yeah.
This thing they set up and somebody did a video of it drag racing against a Ford Shelby GT350. And we posted that the other day on our machinerepeat.com website. So go there, check it out, folks. I think the dude driving the Shelby kind of let off the gas and was smiling watching our combine front, which, again, super dangerous. I do not advise anyone to drag race in an old open 67 combine, but it was pretty fun to see the thing push 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, let alone driving a combine at 95 miles an hour.
I did get some interesting comments, people saying, well, you know, Pete, the grain loss on that might be fairly significant. that's why we put it out there, so we can all laugh in these on these crazy days we're going through.
Exactly. I got to ask real quick, what else you watching for the end of the week and over the weekend?
Well, just, again, a lot of sales coming up. Watching land sales. I actually posted a video from Sullivan Auctioneers. Land value's been strong. So, again, some good sales coming up here in the middle of April. But, yeah, just hop on machinerepeat.com, folks. I'll try to keep you up to snuff what's happening out there.
Perfect. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, sounds good.
All right, that's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Davis, 95 mile an hour in an open combine. How's that sound, buddy?
It seems a little unsafe. Yes, but right, though. It's nice to see the Norwegians get out there and do something a little crazy.
Yeah, sounds like a county fair ride to me. I mean, maybe we could get it entered in the Derby, in the Combine Derby. Come back
I'm not
this
sure we
afternoon.
Can afford the liability.
Come back this afternoon. Bill Biederman, AgMarket.net. Free for all tomorrow morning.